Let go of the old fearful, doubting version of yourself, so the new, brave, fearless woman inside you can emerge. For women, the reward of the wait is not about the desire to find your husband, but the reward of peace, knowing you are living in the seat of God's will for your life. Do that, and you leave him no choice but to bless you with his very best. Chapter 6. What keeps men from waiting? Women need a reason to have sex. Men just need a place. Billy Crystal, City Slickers. A man who is a master of patience is master of everything else. George Saville. Now, from the subtlety and questioning sincerity of women, we take you to men. Not exactly a group of people associated with an eagerness to go without sex. But make no mistake, men suffer just as much as women do from the expectations and delusions surrounding sexuality and romance. In fact, men's common inability to wait betrays a deep insecurity next to which women's fears pale in comparison. See, deliberately not having sex is a totally foreign concept to most guys. It's no accident that we often talk about a boy becoming a man when he has his first sexual experience. At the same time, while many women may seem eager, even desperate, to lock up some sort of commitment, many men run screaming into the night at the mere mention of the word.
Hook up with no strings attached. All right, cool. Let's get it on.
Put a ring on it. Oh, look at the time. That's work calling. I'll text you, babe. I gotta go. Guys are eternally cavalier about this sex-first, commitment-never-value system. Talk to a group of men in a club or out on the basketball court about their conquests, and before long, the whole thing turns into a gathering of 14-year-olds in a locker room, a festival of laughing high-fives and who's-had-more comparisons. But this isn't a laughing matter. Just as some women do real damage by throwing themselves at every potential husband, men inflict genuine self-harm by burning endless time, energy, and money in pursuit of meaningless self-gratification. It's a waste, and it's not necessary. We're not ready to say boys will be boys and dismiss men as overgrown adolescents doomed to follow their genitalia over the cliff to humiliation, financial ruin, and even prison. God gave men their sex drive, but he also gifted them with restraint, passion, wisdom, a restless and bold creativity, and the ability to lead and inspire. If you're a man, all those qualities are in you. All you need is to stop doing the things that keep God's gifts from being fully expressed in you. That means learning to practice the wait. But before we talk about how, let's take a closer look at why men hate to wait. Devon. The decision to wait was probably one of the most difficult ones I've ever made in my life. I was young, had a high-profile executive job in Hollywood, was making good money and driving a nice car. For all intents and purposes, I was living the life most men aspire to live. Yet, I wasn't having sex. There were many times when I questioned my own stance, not because I didn't believe in it, but because it was lonely. No one I knew, Christian or otherwise, was maintaining the commitment for as long as I was. There were many nights I even questioned my own manhood, thinking, am I a real man without sex? Am I living an abnormal, unnatural life? I was publicly and privately ridiculed at times by some who knew of my commitment, even to the point of people questioning my sexual orientation. It hurt me deeply. These were the challenges I had to battle. Yet, even at my weakest, there was this voice in my head that kept saying, keep going. Even when there was no end in sight, even when I couldn't turn to anyone but God to give me direction and strength, I knew that buried inside the commitment were the keys to an amazing life. I can tell you now I was right to have faith. The incredible personal and professional success I have is directly related to my decision to wait.
The List. In her book, The Eclipse, A Memoir of Suicide, Antonella Gambato-Burke writes, "The self-esteem of Western women is founded on physical being, body mass index, youth, beauty. This creates a tricky emphasis on image, but the internalized locus of self-worth saves lives. Western men are very different. In externalizing the source of their self-esteem, they surrender all emotional independence. Conquest requires two parties, after all. A man cannot feel like a man without a partner, corporation, team. Manhood is a game played on the terrain of opposites. It thus follows that male sense of self disintegrates when the other is absent." That observation reflects a profound difference between the sexes' ability to practice the wait. Women, however they might stumble and fall in their commitment to celibacy, are mostly trying to satisfy themselves, not impress other women. Men are exactly the opposite. Habitual players who drive flashy cars and keep a database of women on call do so to curry favor with their boys. Being known as a pimp and dating multiple ladies while keeping it cool and dodging drama is the ultimate demonstration of having game. Approval, validation, and self-worth are all based on what other guys think. Trouble is, if you're the man in your circle and you decide to step up and challenge the male status quo, you will be met with resistance from other men who want you to think that waiting makes men less masculine. The thinking goes like this. The more conquests you have, the more validation you get from others, and the more validation you get, the better you feel. The more notches on your belt, the more you look like a player, and the more women want you. And so on, round and round. With this ethos permeating every part of male culture, the practice of celibacy isn't just inconceivable, it's perceived as insane. The List is that unspoken inventory of must-haves that plays on a 24/7 loop in the minds of many men. The urge to check off everything on the list is what drives many men away from service to God. The List contains every seductive, delirious, worldly goal you ever saw on an episode of Entourage. Wealth, power, position, a hot car, great clothes, a huge crib, big toys, a beautiful, sexy woman on your arm. It's all bling, and it's all hard to get and harder to keep, but that's precisely the point. Men easily lose themselves in conquest, competition, the effort of building something from nothing, lifting themselves above other men. Working through the list becomes a compulsion, because when you have all or even most of the above, you've earned that most coveted of labels, success. The Cost. But it's an illusory kind of success. For proof, look around. We'll bet that you know at least one family that suffered because the man has put his pursuit of financial, material, and sexual validation over his wife and children. We certainly do. It's a very common story. The problem with the male obsession with the list is that the rewards are transactional. That is, to get something, you have to give up something that you won't get back. For a lot of men, that something is time with their families, their peace of mind, or their very character. For others, it's their physical or mental health. God made men aggressive, competitive, sexual beings, but He also made them capable of more. The list is a placebo. It makes some men feel like they live in a world where aggression, competition, and uncontrolled carnality are the only keys to getting what they want.
Success isn't just professional or sexual, however, but moral, personal, and spiritual. If you fail at these things, they become liabilities that will derail everything you aspire to. Think about how many men who used to be on top of the world can't even get a job because they had no discipline in their personal lives. Think about how many men are in jail because while society said they were successful, they overlooked everything else to keep checking off the items on the list. Not only do they pay for their lack of discipline, but their children and grandchildren pay for it too. To paraphrase, the list is a lie. There is no list, no catalog of external achievements that will make a man more of a man. Becoming a man and a husband worthy of the wife God intends for you requires a deeper understanding. Men's disciplines. Because men tend to be so sexually driven, the methods to keep men in the weight need to be fairly extreme. Try some of these. Block the numbers of any women you've been seeing that you aren't serious about. Make contacting you a lost cause. Rude? Maybe. If you're concerned, text or email the women you really care about in the beginning and tell them what you're doing. Have an accountability buddy. That's someone you meet with regularly who doesn't let you backslide. It could be a friend, sibling, pastor, or colleague. But make sure it's someone you can talk to who won't let you off the hook. Quit porn. Yes, even Christian men have been known to look at pornography. Ethical issues aside, it's bad for the willpower. Set up your web browser to block it and stop tempting yourself. Get involved in something that challenges and improves you. Join a networking group or basketball league. Hit the gym. Do something that enriches body, mind, and spirit, as well as improves your extracurricular time. Build a stronger prayer life. We can't stress this enough. Prayer will be your lifeline when you feel weak or when doubts torture your mind. Have a daily prayer practice. Volunteer. Commit to a church ministry, work with a nonprofit, or with fatherless boys. This will focus you on gratitude and your own blessings. Walking, talking sex drives. An obsession with sex, wealth, and power diminishes men. That's bad. But what's even worse is that the reckless pursuit of women demotes many men to little more than walking, talking libidos, primitive animals barely able to control their sexual urges and willing to trample everything in their path just to get some. We shouldn't have to explain how offensive and destructive that idea is. God created man in his own image, gifted with a divine spirit and a mind capable of flights of extraordinary vision and creativity. But an addiction to sex turns men into something far less than the image of God. Make no mistake, some men are addicted to sex and women in the same way that an alcoholic is addicted to liquor. If they don't have a woman around, they can't cope. Men's lack of sexual discipline is responsible for a fair amount of the abuse we see in society. For instance, 1 in 5 women is sexually assaulted while attending college. The problem has gotten so bad that in 2014, President Obama launched an initiative called It's on Us to combat sexual assault on campus. From rape to extramarital affairs, a great deal of evil occurs because some men cannot, or choose not to, control their sexual appetites. Yet with all this, much of our culture still consents to men living with little to no accountability in this area. High schools all over the United States and Canada have, this is so ridiculous that we can hardly stand it, banned girls from wearing leggings, yoga pants, or skinny jeans on the grounds that they are distractions that incite boys to sexual fantasies and turn girls into sex objects. First of all, we're talking about high school kids. Male or female, they're thinking about sex a third of the time anyway. That's normal. But what's disturbing about this sort of thing is that it presumes that males cannot be responsible with their sexual urges, that the only way to prevent men from being aroused is to make sure girls do not wear form-fitting clothes. That's not just condescending to men. It's offensive and humiliating. Devon, we men have never been taught how to manage our sexuality and sexual appetites, how to train and harness that energy constructively. The man who recklessly gives himself over to his sex drive denies and distances himself from his divine nature. He courts chaos, drama, legal troubles, illegitimate children, everything this side of the plagues that Moses warned Pharaoh about in Exodus. Worst of all, he becomes manipulative and callous, willing to do or say anything to get a woman into bed. He becomes addicted not just to the physical feeling of sex, but also to the psychology of how sex makes him feel, and the game he must play to produce this feeling. Before we go too far with this, let's make one thing clear. We get it. There's nothing wrong with men enjoying the attention of women. For some people, that's fun. For a while. But before too long, most men find themselves filled with despair over the empty lives they're leading. If that describes you, then why not commit to stopping the madness? Make a different choice for your life, one that might save your life. Devon, I'll never forget this vision God gave me. In this vision, I was at the altar of my wedding about to say my vows, when the minister told me to turn around. When I did, I saw the center aisle that I had just walked down littered with the fallen bodies of women I had dated. They were writhing and in pain. And then it was like I heard God say, "Was it worth all their pain for you to end up here?" So many times as men, we date selfishly, unconcerned about the collateral damage we do to women, just so we can find happiness in the moment. God was telling me, "Don't play with my daughters' hearts. Stop manipulating them for your own selfish fulfillment. If you're not serious, then let them know and don't lead them on." This was a powerful vision that changed the way I dated as a man. What are you doing with your not-tied-downness? Somewhere between the exhausting frustration of a life spent chasing everything in a skirt and the fulfillment of settling down with one good woman is fear. For many men, obsessing over sex and reducing women to sex objects is a defense against getting pulled into a real relationship and the accompanying terror of losing their freedom. Tied down, trapped by the old ball and chain. Take your pick. In the popular imagination, real men are free range. They come and go with no ties or long-term promises. Once a man gets tangled up with one woman, says the stereotype, he's doomed to a boring, soulless domestic life with kids, a mortgage, and sex with the same woman for the rest of his life. For a man raised on the idea of conquest and competition, who's been living the life of a player, the loss of freedom might look like living death. But honestly, how much freedom do these men really have? If you ask 100 habitually single guys why they're uninterested in commitment, you'll hear a lot of talk about wanting to get further in life and career. They're in love with the idea of freedom in the future, but not its possibilities for today. It's fine to not want to be tied down, but what are you doing with your not-tied-downness? It seems like we've hit the heart of the matter. If you're a man who's not doing anything with his alleged freedom, but chasing one empty liaison after another, are you really free? Or are you enslaved to this type of behavior that controls your every move? God created woman to be part of man, to evoke the best in man, to help you become the best man you can be. Having the right woman in your life will make you a better man. Also, the right woman will bring you closer to your goals. not push you away from them. No before bros. There's a lot of validation and pleasure in being part of a female chasing pack of dudes. You get camaraderie, approval of your skills, and a built-in wingman on a Saturday night. It's appealing. Understood. But here's the secret no one's talking about. Almost every player knows that what he's doing is unhealthy and disrespectful to himself and women, because if another man was doing the same thing to his mother, sister, or daughter, he wouldn't stand for it. Guys know deep down that chasing sexual pleasure diminishes them and debases women. They just won't say it. The pressure of the pack, to fit in and get that fist bump, you're the man approval, is powerful. But if you're going to practice the weight and do it right, you need to step up and be the leader. Say what none of your brothers will say. This isn't good for you and you're opting out. You're going celibate to prove that you're more than your sex drive. The guys will laugh it off as a joke at first, of course. Then they'll be shocked and a little upset. Some might withdraw their validation, and you might panic and feel the need to retract your resolve. Don't. Stick to your guns. Men respect strength, even if it's in something they disagree with. Your real friends will back your play and respect you more for sticking to it, even if they don't get it. Once they see how it's giving you the time and focus to get your mind right, excel in your career, and get in shape, who will be laughing then? Contrary to what you might think, those situations aren't hopeless. Who is your wife? Of course, we're talking about the wife in the same way that we talked about the husband in the previous chapter. Your wife is more than the woman whose finger you put a ring on. She's the perfect fit for your best male qualities, the point to your counterpoint. Your wife is the woman God intends you to be with, and she may be nothing at all like the women you once chased or still chase for their looks or the promise of another one-night stand. Your wife is careful consideration and common sense tempering your bull facing the red cape impulsivity. She cools you off, calms you down, and helps you see the whole picture before you attack the situation. The one who calls out immature man-boy nonsense and reminds you that you're better than that. She challenges you to step up and be everything you can be. The partner who loves your passionate big idea, change the world nature, and embraces your aggressive desire to build a better life for both of you. She helps you understand that raw energy, channel it, and use it to create the future. Your spiritual guide. Women aren't taught to force the action, so they tend to be more open to their inner lives, including conversing with the Lord. Your wife can help you listen to that soft inner voice, a counterweight to your masculine brute force. She possesses persuasiveness and subtlety. If you can't get what you want through a hostile takeover, what about a handshake? Once you see that your fear of losing your freedom is an illusion, you'll start to appreciate how finding your wife can enhance not only your spiritual life, but your material life and every measure of personal success. Devon, having Megan as my wife has not only made me a better man, but better at my profession too. She's tempered my judgment with her own, and I've learned to see choices through the filter of not only my own experience, but hers as well. She's a strong woman who knows her own mind, and her strength has meant that I don't have to be strong all the time. It is a great relief as a man to know that she can handle things at times when I might not be able to. Until I found my wife, I didn't appreciate how much the right woman would help God's plan for my life develop. That's true for all men, I think. We're like raw energy or a raging river that needs to be challenged and channeled so it can change things for the better. That's what Megan has done for me. And that's what a good man's wife does for him. You might not be able to notice your wife because you're being blinded by sexual desires. That's why it's so important for men to practice the wait. If you're a mature man who's open to change, playing the field begins to lose its allure when you start noticing truly attractive qualities in women. After you've been with enough physically attractive women who don't fulfill you intellectually or spiritually, the game loses its allure. You begin to discover that smart, confident women who know what they want and don't need a man to feel complete are irresistible. You can detect these qualities clearly and quickly when you're not chasing sex all the time. How can you find your wife? The surest way it is to become the kind of man she'll be attracted to. Self-aware, mature, and in tune with God's vision for your life. Keep in mind one lesson of our courtship, though. Your wife won't always be the type of woman you think you want. You could be convinced that you will never be interested in someone older than you until a great woman 10 years your senior knocks you off your feet. Have faith and be open to women of all ages, races, backgrounds, and habits. You don't know when or how God will bring your wife to your attention. The weight and business. The mythology of men and the mythology of business are predicated on the same testosterone-soaked idea. Real men make things happen. They force the action. They seize the initiative. Can you smell the machismo? However, business has a lot more in common with the discipline of the weight than men realize. For one thing, you can't control the market. You can only do great things and make sure people know about them, then wait for good stuff to happen. Also, you can't try to please everyone. In the world of the weight and the world of business, excellence and dedication always produce results, even if the results take time. In the weight, you work on your character, mind, and spirit, knowing that when you're ready, God will bring the right woman your way. In business, you produce quality and provide great value for their own sake, knowing that if you do it long enough, customers will come. Faith and the waiting man. Faith can pose a problem even for men who have tired of dating multiple women. Many men lack patience. We don't like to wait for things to come to us. We don't wait, period. But that's a trap. Distractions may reduce the temptation to have sex, but if your focus is not on the patience required to grow your faith, you're not going to do the deep personal work you need to be ready for the woman you're meant to be with. Money, sex, possessions, position, and title distract us from spiritual development. Eventually, you need to stop and go toe to toe with the hard questions. What do I want? Why am I not happy? What is my purpose? Men often bulldoze through such questions instead of sitting with them, getting to know them. Our culture discourages vulnerability, introspection, and doubt in men. These qualities are perceived as weakness. Boys don't cry, we're told. A lot of guys suppress their fears and needs, and then that dam breaks when they're in their 40s or 50s, and they have no idea how to handle it. They know no other way to express themselves other than through anger, power, and control. We've been sold an image of men that's damaging men. The catch about finding your wife is that becoming a worthy husband means embracing vulnerability, introspection, and doubt. Men have the potential to be just as healing, noble, nurturing, and high-minded as women if they hold themselves to a higher standard. That doesn't mean becoming less of a man or becoming more like a woman. It means becoming a different kind of man, one who can shed the Neanderthal mentality of his younger years for greater wisdom, restraint, tenderness, and faith. This means finally leaving the adolescent boy behind and embracing the power of real manhood. There's nothing weak or unmanly about that. Still, a lot of men have trouble with this, and the reason is a lack of faith. Like we said earlier, fear is a failure of faith. Programmed to be stubbornly self-reliant. Men rebel against the notion that waiting will allow God to bring them what they want. Either that, or they don't feel worthy of what God's got in mind, so they go out and make their own life. Career, possessions, and sex will not bring peace. Love, purpose, connection, joy. Those are things only God can bring us, and for Him to do that, we've got to slow down long enough to see what's in our path. Men crave motion. Waiting requires being still and listening. If men can find a way to quell that restlessness and weakness of faith long enough to stop and pay attention, they'll see God work wonders in their lives. That takes trust, and trust doesn't come easily to a lot of men. Men who learn to trust God learn one of the most valuable lessons in life. You might not always be able to trust yourself, but you can always trust God. As men, we love to believe in our strength, but the truth is that we aren't as strong as we think. We think we're being strong in relying on only our own resources and no one else, and then we're surprised when we fall. For men, true strength comes when we allow ourselves to be vulnerable and weak, dependent on God. As you come into practicing the wait, you may find your discipline and strength to be wanting. Accept that while you're finding greater discipline and strength, God is there for you. He won't ever abandon you. He's got your back. Attention is the currency of true success. Men who become stronger in the wait will quickly discover something they weren't expecting. The wait has incredible practical benefits. When you're spending a lot of your time, money, and energy chasing women and sex, you can't operate at full capacity. But as a man, part of what drives you is your ability to be successful in the world, to fulfill your purpose. Men desire as much control over their world and their place in it as possible. The tool to gain control is attention, where you focus your will at any given moment. If you want to change or control something, you have to pay attention to it. Attention is the currency of success. But even the smartest, most gifted man has only so much attention to spend. There's only so much time in the day, only so much mental bandwidth. The more you spend your attention on pursuits like casual sex, the less you have to buy the outcomes you really want, to become the man you know you can truly be. For men, the foundation for success is built on sexual and romantic discipline. Attending to the drama and keeping up with all your different identities is distracting you from the work you need to do on your character, spirituality, and intellect. If you're constantly preoccupied with calling women, keeping them happy, and ducking relationships gone toxic, you probably don't even know what work you need to do. With the wait, that changes. You'll be like a cluttered house where the windows have been opened and 90% of the furniture has been moved out. Suddenly there's room to breathe, think, and stretch. Waiting clears headspace for you to focus on the pursuits that make you a better man, a better lawyer, a better athlete, a better businessman. Can real men wait? Absolutely, and they do. Take inventory. How to begin? Take advantage of a natural male trait. A taste for extreme action and dramatic jumps into the unknown. Take women completely out of the picture for a while. Maybe stop dating for a time. Delete the Black Book app from your phone. Tell the guys you're not going to the usual hangouts anymore. It won't be easy at first, but you'll be amazed at how much time you have to focus on the things you really want in life when you're not chasing sex, and the drama that can come with it. You'll be amazed at how much positive change you'll experience in your life. Too much? Okay. Then start with the core of the weight. Be celibate for 1 week, or a day if even a week seems impossible, and see how it goes. Then add one more week. Use prayer to keep you centered. Practice self-control and discipline by working out and engaging in other things in life you enjoy doing. Identify a pattern of behavior in your dating life that causes you the most headaches, and fix it ASAP. Write down your intentions for waiting and stick to them. Once you start seeing some real benefits, for instance, less stress and more peace and focus, you'll have become a believer in the value of waiting. Most important, just as we suggested for women, do a personal inventory built around the same 5 key questions. What have I been spending my energy and attention on, and why? What have I been compromising to do that? Is what I'm doing filling me up or emptying me out? What is the driving force in my choices? What am I ready to sacrifice in order to change things and become my best self? You'll have to sacrifice plenty in order to wait, but that's okay. The weight gives men permission not to stoop to the expectations of others. It absolves men of the need to reinforce the male stereotype. And anyway, after a while, the whole peacocking thing really loses its appeal. Every child of God has an innate desire to do more and be more. So get to it, man. Wise waiting. There's plenty you can do with the spare time and money you used to spend on buying clothes and accessories, going to clubs, picking up women, and dodging angry post-sex calls and text messages. Go to church consistently, visit parents and old friends, read, work out, focus on your career advancement, launch a business, learn to meditate, get a pet, learn to cook. Try new restaurants. Start writing that book that you've been putting off. Live in the present moment. Chapter 7. Can I date while I wait? To say that one waits a lifetime for his soulmate to come around is a paradox. People eventually get sick of waiting, take a chance on someone, and by the art of commitment become soulmates, which takes a lifetime to perfect. Chris Jamie, Venus in Arms. You're practicing the wait. You're celibate. You're working on yourself in body, mind, and spirit. But you're bored. You don't want to sit at home or spend all your time at the gym, at work, or at church. You want to have some fun. So you're asking questions. Should I date right now? When is God going to bring the right person? When is someone going to ask me out? When am I going to meet the one? These are the questions that plague you when you're single. Don't worry, they plagued us too. Let's be honest. The longer these questions go unanswered, the more depressed we tend to become. How do we remain patient with the process, yet active while we're waiting? The answer is definitely not don't date. That's not what we're suggesting at all. You can date while you're practicing the wait. You just can't date in the same way you did before. This is where it's critical to remember that the wait is not just about sex. The principles behind the wait, productive patience, listening to God, working on perfecting yourself and letting good things happen, will benefit you in all areas of your relationships and your life as a whole. Dating is a perfect example. Even if you're practicing the wait and remaining celibate, you need to assess if you and the person you're dating have passion. You'll need it if you want your marriage to be successful. Letting sex wait allows you to evaluate all the aspects of your attraction: physical, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual, and figure out if your chemistry is real and has the potential to last. What do you deserve? Now, it's true that when you're beginning to wait, it can be really beneficial to take some time to be alone and get used to the idea of not having sex and resisting temptation. This is a time to take stock of who you are, what you want, and why you've been having relationship troubles. That's wisdom. The world isn't going to end if you excuse yourself from the dating scene for a while. The right girls or guys will still be out there. But before you rejoin them, answer three very important questions for yourself. What relationship pattern do I want to break? What kind of person do I want in my life? What do I deserve? The last one is the most important. We ask ourselves what we want, but we rarely ask ourselves what we deserve. When we forget to ask, we're more likely to approach relationships from a place of need and insufficiency. We need to be with someone because we fear being alone. We can't end a relationship that causes us pain because we worry that no one else will want us. We feel insufficient. Or perhaps we feel that hurt and conflict are what we deserve, a common state of mind for people healing from pain or trauma. If you spent years dating the same messed up people, putting up with the same drama, and recovering from the same hysterical fights and awful breakups, ask yourself why. Was it because you felt deep down that was all you deserved? We're here to tell you that you deserve more. You're a child of God. You're naturally a source of love and light, an important player in manifesting God's will in the world, if you'll let yourself see it. You deserve respect, fulfillment, joy, and the kind of profound, real love that only comes when you get to know someone's spirit, and when you love yourself enough to let them love you. What do you deserve? Love? Respect? Someone who will bring out the best in you and inspire you to bring out the best in them? Dating, carefully while practicing the wait, is a terrific way to start finding some of the answers. It's confusing. Still, dating when you're in that place where God comes first can be mighty confusing. It was for us. We were both at a place in our lives where we were listening to God's voice and trying to remain open to what He was sending us. But even then, when He did everything but hit us over the head, we weren't sure what to do.
Megan. After a while, I started speaking my knowledge about Devon. I told my friend Tasha Smith, "I have to tell you something. God told me that Devon's my husband." She supportively smiled and then said, "Praise God, you know he's celibate, right?" I said, "Well, I'm celibate too." She said, "No, he's for real celibate, and you know he's a preacher too, right?" I didn't know that, and to be honest, I'm glad I didn't, because if I had, it probably would have scared me away. But during those months, I settled into celibacy, focusing on healing, letting God work through me, and separating those people who weren't good for me from my life. At one point, I told my god sister Kimberly about Devon. She said, "Does he know he's your husband?" I said, "No, but I know because God told me." Then came the premiere of Jumping the Broom in May 2011. My girlfriends and I were running around the party trying to find Devon because by this time, I'd told all my close friends about the revelation I believed I'd gotten from God. They wanted to meet this Devon guy for themselves. So as we were going upstairs to the second floor of the party, he and his aunts were coming downstairs. I remember feeling like a little schoolgirl caught on my way to catch a glimpse of her crush. Later, at the party after the premiere, one of the guests was talking me to death. Devon texted me, and I replied, "Help!" We decided to meet outside and talk. That was when I began to see the revelation God gave me coming to life.
Devon, I was busy doing the promotion for my first book, produced by Faith, which was set to come out the same week that Jumping the Broom premiered. I did an event in Riverside, California, at Mount Rubido, a church where I often preach, and Megan and Laz Alonzo were kind enough to come out and talk about the movie, as well as give insight into their careers and faith. I had no idea that Megan already considered me to be her husband. I was glad she came, but I wasn't thinking anything romantic. It's funny, because a few months before this event, my cousins Troy and LaFawn, who live in Las Vegas, had told me, because of all that's going on in your life, you're going to marry somebody famous, high profile. I scoffed. No way. You all are crazy. That was not something I wanted at all. Well, Troy and LaFawn were at this event at Mount Rubido, and afterward they came up to me, pointed to Megan, and said, "That's her. She's the one." I was floored. I said, "What? No, you don't know what you're talking about. I did not want to date an actress, much less marry one." Then my mother and my cousin Stacy said something similar. They both were like, "What was going on with you and Megan on stage? We think she likes you." I thought all of them had been drinking, LOL, or were just completely out of their minds, because I didn't see that at all. But they were right. There was definitely an emotional and spiritual connection between Megan and me that I couldn't see. Then the premiere of Jumping the Broom came. My family was there, and we were having a great time. I ran into Megan on the stairs, and we ended up taking a picture with my mom, my brother, and a few aunts. Wow, Lord. Was that a hint? Megan in a photo with my family? But I was still oblivious. Finally, as the party was dying down, the uncertainty got the best of me. I decided to see if something was really up with us. I texted her. Immediately, she replied, "Help!" I went downstairs, and we met outside in the courtyard of the party and started talking. The deeper we got into conversation, the more people started coming over and interrupting us, so I told her we'd have to wait and finish our conversation in a few weeks, after I finished my book tour. DUI, Dating Under Infatuation. If there's one thing our story should make clear, it's that being in the wait does not mean you'll know what to do when you meet someone amazing. In fact, meeting someone like that could make waiting harder. What do you do? Do you date this person? Do you wait for God to tell you what to do? We definitely come down on the side of getting out there and testing the waters, carefully. When in doubt, go out. But do it armed with this knowledge. Infatuation, or sometimes what we think is love, can be an addictive substance. It's amazing to feel that rush of hormones and that electricity when you meet, touch, or kiss someone for the first time. Like songs and movies have said before us, infatuation is a drug. Infatuation is defined as an intense but short-lived passion or admiration for someone. The problems start when we let the effects of infatuation, not our reason and character, dictate our actions. That's when we make reckless, foolish, self-destructive choices over and over and over again. Sometimes you can get so infatuated with someone and you think it's real love, but instead of waiting to evaluate this, you move too fast with that person. By the time infatuation wears off, you're in so deep, it's hard to get out. Bad daters are, essentially, infatuation addicts. Do you have a friend who's constantly repeating the same awful behavior with girls or guys? We'll bet you do. Everybody has at least one. Hint, if you don't have one, odds are you are the one. This person always seems to be hurtling from one doomed relationship to another, never looking before he or she leaps, always eager to surrender to the feelings that come when things are just starting out, always getting his or her heart broken, and more often than not, crying on your shoulder. Does this pattern look familiar? 1. Your friend cleans up the mess after a tormented, horrible breakup and swears never to make the same mistakes again. 2. Your friend meets someone new and after an unnervingly short period insists that it's love. 3. You or others spot serious red flags about the person, but when you mention them and remind your friend about the pledge not to repeat past relationship blunders, he or she gets angry and insists this person is the one. 4. The infatuation passes and things go south. Fights, lying, reading text messages, accusations, the whole horror show. 5. The inevitable nasty breakup happens, leaving your friend hurt and shattered. And if this has been going on long enough, possibly straining your friendship. Most of us have done it at one time or another. Some do it for years before finally waking up and realizing that they're on drugs. DUI in this book means dating under infatuation. The jumpy shot of adrenaline we get when he touches our arm. The warm rush we feel when she smiles at us from across the room. That's sweet and seductive, but it ain't love. Love is deeper, more mature, and subtler. When we confuse it with infatuation and sexual chemistry, we waste years chasing shadows, trying to satisfy our need for certainty or validation, and blinding ourselves to how God is trying to bless us. Type or typo? A big part of the weight is about breaking old patterns, and one of those patterns has to do with your type, as in the type of person you've typically dated. You know, blondes or guys with goatees, career women or bad boys. We all have a few types we're drawn to. The trouble with types is that they're really stereotypes. They're not real people. They're just qualities that we want in our lives. But when you focus on type, you date a caricature, not a person, so those relationships are doomed. Try deliberately dating out of your type and see what happens. If you've always been attracted to tall guys, try dating shorter ones. If you've always been attracted to women with long hair, give one with short hair a shot. What have you got to lose? The type you've been dating hasn't led to anything lasting, so it's worth trying something new. The jury is out. Because it's so tempting to confuse the flush and rush of a kiss with love, dating while waiting demands a fresh approach to the social scene. If you want to meet people and enjoy yourself, you need to adopt what we call the jury box mentality.